This message was given at Grace Community Church in Minden, Nevada. At the end, we will give information about how to contact us to receive a copy of this or other messages.
Well, go ahead and turn to Ecclesiastes. You just turn to chapter 1. So last week we opened up with sort of an overview of Ecclesiastes, asking this question, is life meaningless? And of course, my understanding of Ecclesiastes is that it is not about the so-called meaninglessness of life. That actually is a fundamentally unbiblical perspective that life is meaningless. And I suggested rather that the theme, which is in 1:2 and 12:8, right? Our translations typically say, vanity of vanities, says the preacher, vanity of vanities, all is vanity, or NIV, meaninglessness, or other translations, futility of futilities, right? You have this statement at the beginning and the statement repeated at the end. It's an inclusio or bookends. So it's a thematic statement, and it is, in a sense, it's an absolute statement. He's not saying it's only this under these circumstances. He's saying it's this under all circumstances. All of life is covered with havel. And that's the word, havel. It is used 38 times in the book of Ecclesiastes, which comprises nearly half of its entire Old Testament uses, which is really an amazing thing. And so, I noted last week that havel does not mean vanity or meaninglessness or futility, but rather, what does havel mean? Breath, vapor, mist. It is something, and of course, that's a metaphor, right? That is a metaphor. Vapor of vapors. Everything is vapor, right? That's a metaphor, but it's a metaphor that indicates what? That life is short. It's transient. It's like the breath on a cold morning. It's just gone, right? Now, that is the message of the Bible. The Bible does teach us that life is short. Life is a vapor. We're like grass, which is sprouts in the morning and then is dead by the evening. And so, by the way, if you live to be 30 years old or you live to be, 100 years old, life is still a vapor. If you're stillborn, life is a vapor. If you live to be, as I saw somebody turned 116 or something, they probably drank and smoked their whole life and chewed and went with girls who dude and all that. And here they are, 116 years old. Guess what? They die. Life is still a vapor, right? Vapor. Life is a vapor. Now, what I did, we're not going to do my original plan. I printed up all 38 uses in Ecclesiastes of havel. Now, the problem is that if you take an English Bible concordance, let's say Strong's Concordance or New American Standard Concordance or whatever, and you look up the word vanity, you're not going to get all 38 uses for havel, because our translators don't consistently translate havel with the same word, all right? And so I printed up all of the 38 uses, and then had Jason do it because I couldn't figure out how to do it on my Bible program. And so since he's the techie, nerdy, geeky elder, I had him do it. Okay. So if you want a copy of this, by the way, just ask me and I'll send you the word doc and you can see it. What you find as you look at these 38 uses of Havel in Ecclesiastes is that the metaphor for vapor, mist, which means transient, sometimes is just a neutral statement. Life is fleeting. And it's not stated either positively or negatively. Sometimes in Ecclesiastes it's stated with somewhat of a positive sense to it, as we'll see tonight. But a lot of times Havel is put in somewhat a negative term, but simply because the brevity of life is painful when you stop and think about it. When you stop and think about the fact that life is a vapor, it's a mist, there is a certain aspect of frustration, of mystery, right? And pain with that. And so, as you go through and you look at these, and I hope that you do ask me for it, because you can go through, just cross out every place that says vanity or futility, and just put vapor or breath, and then you can see the way that Solomon uses this to express that everything is vapor. I was going to make a list of everything that Solomon lists as vapor. And there's like about 20 things. But the fact is that the list wouldn't be good enough because he says everything is vapor. So how can you make a list with everything? Well, you can't. And so here's the message of Ecclesiastes. Life is short, but that's only part of the message. Okay. Brevity of life brings pain. And so let's take a look here. Ecclesiastes is structured around four sections. And in fact, what's interesting is that if you sat down and read Ecclesiastes in one sitting, you actually would be able to identify these if you were looking for these themes. All right. So the first section goes from 1:2 to 2:26. And then if you notice in your notes, what I have is in parentheses, the key summary statement of that section. All right. And then the next section goes 3:1 to 5:20, the key section being 5:18 to 20. Then you have 6:1 to 8:15, 8:15 being the summary. And then 8:16 to 12:14, and then 13 and 14 of chapter 12 is the summary. And what I'd like to do is, before we kind of think about the specific message, I'd like you to see the way that these summary statements work, all right? So if you turn over to chapter 2, we're going to look at this particular text because I identify this as the first key text in more detail in a minute. But just notice the way this works. So verse 24, Solomon says, "There's nothing better for a man than to eat and drink and tell himself that his labor is good. This also I have seen that it is from the hand of God." So if it's from the hand of God, can eating and drinking and labor actually be meaningless? No. All right. "For who can eat and who can have enjoyment without him? For to a person who is good in his sight, he has given wisdom and knowledge and joy. While to the sinner, he's given the task of gathering and collecting so that he may give to the one who is good in God's sight." This too is Havel. This too is vapor and striving after wind. So notice clearly in this first summary section, what Solomon says is that there is something that is better. In fact, he puts it in near absolute terms. There's nothing better than to eat, drink, do your work. This is God's gift, and the ability to enjoy it is God's gift, right? And then Solomon makes this amazing distinction. You have people that are right in the sight of God and people that are wrong in the sight of God. And guess what? God takes those who are right and blesses them in a way that he doesn't with those who are not right in his sight. And then he says, and this too is vapor. Right? Now, I would suggest to you that this passage alone should cure us of seeing the word Havel as being meaningless or futile, because none of those things that he mentions are meaningless or futile or vanity. They're just a vapor. All right. Next section goes from 3:1 to the end of chapter 5. And notice this summary statement and see if you can identify any parallels here. Start at verse 18. See, you can see almost the summary type recap. Here is what I have seen to be good and fitting: to eat, to drink, and enjoy oneself in all one's labor in which he toils under the sun during the few years of life which God has given him. For this is his reward. Furthermore, as for every man to whom God has given riches and wealth, he's also empowered him to eat from them and receive his reward and rejoice in his labor. This is the gift of God. For he will not often consider the years of his life because God keeps him occupied with the gladness of his heart. And so as Solomon wraps up yet another section, notice the repeated theme. Here is something that is good and fitting or appropriate or beautiful. This is good and beautiful, and that is to eat. And to that we give a hearty amen, right? To drink and enjoy oneself in all one's labor in which he toils under the sun. Now, take the traditional party line on Ecclesiastes. Life under the sun is typically seen as what? Life without God. Notice, in which he toils under the sun during the few years of his life, which God has given him. So far from life being under the sun is life without God. Rather, life under the sun is the gift of God. It's just short. Right? Okay. And so then, again, 19 and 20, God blesses people with the capacity to enjoy the gift. Right? By the way, not everybody's given that capacity. Right? Not everybody's given that capacity. Some of the most miserable people in the world are the ones who have the most. Okay? All right, then that brings us over to chapter 8, which is the end of another section. This is one of the briefest summary statements. Verse 15, so I commended pleasure. Now, right away, some of you think, well, that can't be in the Bible. I mean, pleasure has got to be bad. Well, if you understand pleasure from a God-centered perspective, you realize that pleasure is not simply sinful sensuality, but rather pleasure is simply the enjoyment of the gifts of God. That's what real pleasure is. There most certainly is an illegitimate pleasure in this life that is attached to the love of the world, all right? But there's also a legitimate pleasure. Stop and think about Psalm 16, verse 11. At your right hand, in your presence is fullness of joy. At your right hand are pleasures forevermore. All right. So Solomon says, I commended pleasure, enjoyment. For there's nothing good for man under the sun except to eat and drink and to be merry, to be happy. And this will stand by him in his toils, that is his labors, throughout the days of his life, which God has given him under the sun. It's the same message. It's the same refrain. These are the repeated themes. That is, this life which God has given to you is a life that's lived under the sun. Who lives under the sun? Everybody lives under the sun. Who is subject to Havel? Everybody is subject to Havel. Nobody gets to escape it. But the goal of life is not learning to escape the brevity of it, but rather to enjoy what God has given to you when he has given it to you, and to realize that you can't hang on to it longer than he intends.
And so food is a gift from God, and drink is a gift from God, and happiness, whatever happiness is extended to you by the hand of God, is a gift from God in this life. Now, to be sure, at the end of some people's life, they have more sorrow than happiness, and the wonder is not that we have any sorrow in life, the wonder is that we have any happiness in life. When you stop and consider what we really deserve, the wonder is not why we have so much sorrow. The wonder is why we have any happiness. And Solomon says, listen, fleeting life under the sun, gift of God. Enjoy it while you have it. Right? Last, there's actually another subtext, but we'll hopefully get to that maybe. It's my favorite passage in Ecclesiastes. So the end, chapter 12. Now, I'd like you actually to just back up to verse 9. So in addition to being a wise man, the preacher, Kohelet, also taught the people knowledge, and he pondered, searched out, and arranged many proverbs. The preacher, Kohelet, sought to find delightful words and write words of truth correctly. Now, by the way, does that sound like it was his goal to depress you into belief? That doesn't sound like that to me. It doesn't sound like that Kohelet starts out and says, you know what? I'm going to make everybody so miserable with the idea that life is meaningless that they're going to turn to God. So the preacher sought to find what kind of words? Delightful words, and to write words of truth correctly. So for those who say, well, he gives us a perspective of unbelief, that's not writing the words of truth correctly. Okay. So, by the way, a lot of the theories about Ecclesiastes fall when you look at this last section. Verse 11, the words of wise men are like goads, and masters of these collections are like well-driven nails. They're given by one shepherd. So who gives the words of wisdom in Ecclesiastes? The one shepherd, and that's God. But beyond this, my son, be warned, the writing of many books is endless. Excessive devotion to books is wearying to the body. We'll pass that by quickly. Verse 13. The conclusion, when all has been heard, is fear God, keep his commandments. NAS says, because this applies to every person, you can translate it a little differently. This is the whole of man. Okay? For God will bring every act of judgment, everything which is hidden, whether good or evil. There's the grand summary of Ecclesiastes. All right. So I think that if you read the book and you look for these repeated refrains, right? Repetition is for the purpose of emphasis, which is underscoring the themes of the book. What you begin to see is that there really is a marvelously positive message behind a book that seems really somewhat depressing at times. Okay, so what we're going to do is we're going to take a look at the first key text, and we're going to kind of set it up a little bit. And what I want to do in this is, in a sense, maybe give you some handles on how to go through and then read the whole book. All right. So we're going to start back in chapter 1. So the theme is verse 2, right? Havel of Havels says Kohelet, Havel of Havels, all is Havel. That's the theme. Now, does Solomon wrestle with problems in life in Ecclesiastes? And the answer is yes. And here is the main problem in life, verse 3. What advantage does man have in all his work, which he does under the sun? That fundamental question is the nagging question for Solomon throughout the whole book. So if life is a vapor, it's a mist, goes by so quickly, and yet I know that God has ordained that I spend my life doing what?
working. You were created to work. You weren't created primarily for leisure. You were created for work. So Solomon's question in verse 3 is not a philosophical question, but it's a question about what advantage or what is the profit of spending your life working when life itself just ends up being a vapor. Now, is that a pretty practical question? Yes, says the man who knoweth not how to retire. Okay. It is an incredibly practical question. I think about my dad working 38 years at UPS. Okay. Waking up in the middle of the night to go to work, driving to UPS, hooking up two trailers, driving those trailers to San Francisco or Kettleman City or some other place, meeting some other guy, switching trailers, bringing them back, putting the trailers in the yard so that then they can be unloaded, and day after day after day after day after day for 38 years. And so the prime of my father's life was not spent focusing on the joys and happinesses of life. The prime of life was spent doing what? Working. And working hard. And working for what? You think those 38 years went by like a vapor? You better believe it. You better believe it. Not necessarily in the daily grind, right? But looking back, do you think that he says, you know what, it seems just like yesterday. I was delivering packages to Ronald Reagan, who was the governor of California. Okay, right? So life goes by quickly, and then you ask yourself, you know what I've spent the majority of my life doing? Working. And if I've spent the majority of my life working, and this life is a vapor, now, Solomon does not question for a single solitary moment whether or not God intended him to work. In fact, the very language, there are two words for work that are used in Ecclesiastes. One means toil, frequently translated labor, all right? But it's toil. So it's work after the fall. All right? Because work after the fall has a toilsomeness to it. Right? There's a burden to it. Okay? The other is just work activity, that which you do. All right? So Solomon never questions at all whether or not he is intended to toil. In fact, that's part of the pain of it, is that he knows that work is rooted in creation itself. God creates man to do what? To work the garden. Right? By the way, I would remind us that the fourth commandment tells us that we're to work for 6 days and rest one. Okay? That's what unions have got us. 5-day work weeks. 8-hour work days, right? I think Solomon would have said, that's nonsense. You better work harder than 40 hours a week. Different work ethic in the Bible. Right? So why work then? What's the point of devoting myself to work? So this is, by the way, this was what complicates life as a vapor. This is what complicates the fact that life goes by so quickly, is that I spend the majority of it working. And so
Jeff Myers has really good commentary on Ecclesiastes, says when we're thinking about work, everything we do is like building sandcastles. That's what work seems like. You build a sandcastle, you put all your energy and effort into this really nice sandcastle, and then guess what happens? The tide comes in and ruins it all. And so you start over, and that's life. Okay? Now, after that, so he gets the painful question out there. What's the advantage? What's the profit in me doing all this work under the sun when life is so brief? And so then what he does is in a very masterful poem, verses 4 to 11, he talks about the monotony of the created world. All right. Now, there's a brilliance, in a sense, behind the way that this poem gets put right up front, because what Solomon's point is, you know, the sun always rises, okay? Which I think Ernest Hemingway probably took from Solomon, all right? Was that the name of his book, The Sun Always Rises? The Sun Also Rises, okay. So who reads Ernest Hemingway anyway? So here's this monotony. So the sun comes up, and in fact, Solomon actually presents pictures for us, like, you know, the sun comes up, and then it goes down. And then you know what the sun does? In order to make sure you don't get too much sleep, it runs back. And then comes up again. Okay. And so there's this monotony of nature, right? The world just keeps right on going. And so, in a sense, the monotony of the world around us actually seems to virtually mock our vapor-like existence. Okay. One of these days you're going to die. And when you die, the sun will still come up. And when you die, birds will actually keep singing. And when you die, the world around you will be absolutely impervious to the fact that you are gone. Solomon says, you know, it's this monotony of the world around us that almost seems to mock our vapor-like existence. Okay. The monotony of the world around us seems to mock our work, too. Right? Because what is it that washes out the sandcastle? Well, it's the wave, which just comes no matter how nice my sandcastle. The tide never says, whoa, now that sandcastle is a cut above. So we think we'll let him enjoy it for a little while longer. Maybe we'll skip a few, right? Doesn't work that way. It just comes in, all right? So Solomon is taking us on a ride, okay? And he wants you to feel his pain. He's taking you on the Indiana Jones ride at Disneyland. I asked somebody last week, how many of their, was it Wellers? You guys, Indiana Jones? Somebody was, you know what ride I'm talking about? It's awful. It's the worst ride ever invented. And there's a reason why it's the worst ride ever invented. It's because it is absolutely a miserable, torturous experience for a person with a bad back. Okay? Is that true? Okay. Because what happens is you sit in this car, and oh, it's so exciting, Indiana Jones, and yet what happens is everything is so abrupt, everything is so violent, it's up, it's down, it's a turn, everything's unexpected, there's nothing predictable about it, and you feel like actually somebody just put you inside of a dryer. All right? Okay, so it's no fun. Okay? Now, what Solomon's doing is he says, go ahead, sit down here. And then he pulls that thing over so you can't get out, right? And he says, we're going to go for a ride. Now, what I want you to do is I want you to experience the jolts and the jerks and the abruptness and the mystery and the pain and the frustration of life, because I want you to be fully nauseated by the time I tell you what the answer is. That's what he's doing. All right. So, in verses 12 to 18 of chapter 1, he talks about, you know, verse 12, I, Kohelet, have been king over Israel in Jerusalem, set my mind to seek and explore by wisdom concerning all that has been done under heaven. It is a grievous task which God has given to the sons of men to be afflicted with. And so Solomon's saying, you know, God has granted me special gifts and abilities. And so because of the pain and the frustration that I have noticed in this vaporous life, what I've decided to do is to take my gifts of wisdom and apply them to try to figure this out. Because one thing is for sure, when you recognize that life is a vapor, one of the implications of a vaporous life is that there is an awful lot of mystery involved in it. Okay? There's stuff that you just, that because it's a mist, you can't figure it out. And in fact, sometimes trying is just like trying to catch the wind. Okay? So Solomon says, I decided to devote the golden brain which God had given to me to figure this out. And here's Solomon's conclusion in 12 to 18, and that is that wisdom itself has its own limitations and its own liabilities. Limitations, because human wisdom, even that which is granted by God, cannot figure out the mysteries of life. Liabilities, because the more you know, the more you hurt. You realize that. The wiser you are, the more pain you experience, because you have a more accurate insight into the real nature of life. And life can be really, really painful. So Solomon gets to this conclusion, and so wisdom has limitations, wisdom has liabilities. Now, he's not going to give up on wisdom for a minute, all right? He's going to come back to wisdom because he realizes that wisdom is actually better than folly. But what he does is he shifts gears in chapter 2, and in verses 1 through 11, he goes on the hunt to try to mitigate the pain and the mystery of this short life. Now, we don't have time to go into the details. Some people look at some of the ways that these things are translated and think that Solomon was, you know, some, you know, fall down drunk and just basically devoted himself to better living through chemistry, and not chemistry like high school chemistry, but chemistry like substance chemistry. Okay. The use of wine and so forth, and that he was became, you know, basically a sexaholic as well. And that's not the picture that Solomon is painting here. He is saying, though, that as I thought about how short this life is, I wondered if I could mitigate some of the pain and the frustration by pursuing pleasure and by pursuing personal achievement, by pursuing personal success. I mean, maybe in this short life, if I had those things, if I did those things, then maybe that might clear up a little bit of the fog of Havel, and maybe that might give me a deeper sense of satisfaction in this vaporous life. And in fact, if you look at verses 9 through 11, this is his conclusion. I became great. By the way, he's not bragging. He's just telling the truth. I became great and increased more than all who preceded me in Jerusalem. My wisdom also stood by me. All that my eyes desired, I did not refuse them. I did not withhold my heart from any pleasure, for my heart was pleased because of all my labor. And this was my reward for all my labor. And so verse 10, he says, you know what? I looked around. I looked at the garden parks. I looked at the architecture that I had developed. I looked at all of my achievements. And I thought, yes, this is what it's about. This is what gives me a sense of accomplishment, is looking at my achievements as my reward. Okay? Very important. Verse 11. Thus I considered all my activities, which my hands had done, and the labor which I had exerted, or more literally, the labor which I had laboriously labored. And behold, all was havel, and striving after the wind. Okay? And there was no profit under the sun. In other words, all of my achievements, all of my accomplishments, all of my successes, all of my hard work, which gave me a sense of satisfaction, actually, I realized that all of it was still a vapor. It was like trying to chase and catch the wind. What gave me that temporary sense of satisfaction, I realized, was one of these days, and he's going to explain this a little bit later in this chapter, there's actually an evil to it, because I'm the one that worked hard for it, and then I'm going to give it to some knucklehead that didn't work for it. And that chaps me. Right? And so, even at the end of this, he says, you know what? I look at everything that I did, and all of the labor, and so I'm thinking, God put me here to work, I'm going to work. And I'm going to work in a way that I achieve great things. And then when I looked at that, I realized, you know what? That's not the profit either. That's not the reward either. That's not the advantage either. Because even that is a vapor. So, with those pursuits, in a sense, being a bust, he goes back to wisdom, which is 2:12-17. And notice what he says in verse 13. And I saw that wisdom excels folly as light excels darkness. And here's the interesting thing. The word excel is our word advantage. Same exact word. There's a play on words. We completely miss it in English because we translate it with the word excel. He says, I saw that wisdom has more advantage, more profit than folly, as light has more profit than darkness. Okay? So in other words, at the end of the day, I'm not going to give up on wisdom, because I know at the end of the day, wisdom always turns out better than folly. All right? And so verse 17 actually, in a sense, kind of sets us up. Actually, we have to back up just a little bit here. So he says, all right, so the wise man has eyes in his head. That's how he's got insight. He can see. But the fool walks in darkness. Now, he's just said wisdom is better than folly. So being a wise man is more advantageous than being a fool, right? That's not negotiable, but notice the painful discovery. What is the painful discovery? One fate befalls them both. They both die. The wise man dies and the fool dies, right? So wisdom's better than folly, but guess what? Both die. Do you think Solomon has a problem with this? The answer is, of course he has a problem with this. Because what underscores Havel more than anything else is the fact of death. Right? I mean, when the breath on the cold morning goes out and then disappears, once it disappears, that's death. It's gone. And so here's Solomon's fundamental problem. He's saying, you know what? Wisdom has more advantage. Being a wise man has more advantage than being a fool. Okay? At least you can walk around with eyes in your head instead of walking around in darkness. You don't stub your toe all the time. But even wisdom can't escape the havel, the mist, the vapor of death. And so here's his conclusion, verse 17. And this is setting us up. So I hated life. You know what that is? That's on Indiana Jones' ride. And you're going up and you think you're going up more. And then all of a sudden, you go straight down. That's what that is. So I hated life. Really? That doesn't sound very spiritual. Well, it doesn't sound very spiritual, but it is the conclusion of a person who is wrestling with the pain of the fact that, you know what? I can work all my life. I can be wise. I can walk with eyes in my head. I can be a person who walks in light. And you know what? I'm still going to die. And in fact, I'm still going to die just like the idiot. So I hated life. For the work which had been done under the sun was grievous to me, because everything is vapor and striving after the wind. Do you see how much sense Havel's vapor then now makes? Okay? So, just in case you missed the first part, verse 18. Thus I hated all the fruit of my labor for which I had labored under the sun, for I must leave it to the man who will come after me. Solomon finds this to be an incredible bummer. In fact, I think that if Solomon would have had a big, gigantic Winnebago, he would have put on that Winnebago the bumper sticker that says, "I am spending my children's inheritance." Verse 19, he says, who knows whether he'll be a wise man or a fool? You're going to leave. You work your fingers to the bone. You exert all your brain power, your back aches. You've done all this great stuff. You've achieved, and you've got to leave it to somebody. And who knows whether the guy you're going to leave it to is wise or an idiot? Right? Who knows? You don't get to pick. Yet he'll have control over all the fruit of my labor, for which I had labored, by acting wisely under the sun. This is vanity. This is havel. This is mist and mystery and frustration and anguish. Verse 20. He says, therefore, I completely despaired of all the fruit of my labor for which I had labored under the sun. Do you get the frustration? More importantly, do you commiserate with the frustration? That's what he wants you to do. He wants you to commiserate. He wants you to feel what he feels. I go to work every day. I do what I'm supposed to do. I try to apply God's principles to my life. I try to live a life that's pleasing to him. But you know what? Sometimes it seems like it is for no purpose. You heard about the pastor, right? Who quit the pastorate and became a mortician. Somebody saw him and said, Pastor, why did you quit? He says, I spent my whole ministry straightening people out. And as soon as I straighten them out, they get all crooked again. Now, when I straighten people out, they stay that way. Okay? He says in verse 21, when there is a man who's labored with wisdom, knowledge, and skill, then he gives his legacy to the one who has not labored with him. This too is havel, and then notice it, and a great evil. Here, he clearly attaches a value judgment to life as a vapor. All right? Now, in verse 22, he says, what does a man get in all his labor and in his striving with which he labors? Notice the repetition of these words under the sun, because all his days, his task is painful and grievous. Even at night, his mind does not rest. This too is a vapor. Okay? So you're working on some big project, something that you're just pouring yourself into. And you know that, boy, this is going to be a big deal. This is going to be a big achievement. And there you are, and you are laboring. And are you having fun? No. And then when you go home and you're supposed to rest and you're supposed to be going to sleep, what are you thinking about? Thinking about your day, thinking about what you got to do tomorrow. And so Solomon says, this stinks. This stinks. Is this what God intends in this vaporous life? So, trying to eke out some satisfaction from his accomplishments, and then trying to find that sense of meaning and purpose and joy and satisfaction in his work, and then seeing that the satisfaction comes in, my reward, I did it, and then realize, you know what? It's just painful because it's vapor. It's here today, gone tomorrow, and then I die. There's good news. Work hard all your life. For what? To die. So we have invented this thing. It's called retirement. What? Now, seriously, is retirement a recent invention? Yes. Let's see. George? Did your grandfather have an individual retirement account and look forward to playing golf? What did he do? Worked until he died. Same with my grandfather. Okay. There's a generation of people that retirement is like, what? Retirement? What does that mean? Does that mean like getting new tires or what? I don't know what this word means, because, you know, even after my grandfather had to retire from delivering the mail, he still woke up at 5 o'clock every morning and went out and did what? Whatever he could find to do. Okay. So retirement is recent invention. Before retirement, people just worked until they died. Right? Now, what is the grand goal of most baby boomers? It is to be able to retire and not have to work as a greeter at Walmart. Am I telling the truth? Okay. What is the primary reason for people wanting to get really good college degrees so that they can get into a really good job? Is it because they're passionate about aeronautical engineering? Some people are passionate about what they do, but they're usually English or math majors. Okay? No offense. People try to get the best job they can so that they can work and do what?
Work for what? For retirement. I think Solomon would have said, what? Are you stupid? God didn't make you to work for retirement. Okay? Now, I'm not saying if you retire that that's bad. Okay? But I think that you need to have a Christian theology of retirement and what you do with those years. Okay? Because, you know what? They're not going to let my dad drive a UPS truck at 70. All right? So he's got to retire. Okay? One of these days, they're going to tell you, Vic, that you can't come into work anymore. Okay? I know it'd probably be when you're 80, but okay, so sometimes you can't help it, but we have this idea, work for retirement, work for retirement. Okay, so here you are, you spend how much of your adult life working? Well, almost all of it for what? For 10 years, maybe, of chasing golf balls. It's insanity. Because what happens in life is that the vapors, Havel, get shorter and shorter and shorter, all right? So your first 40 go by quickly. Your second 40, if you get the 3 score and 10 plus 10, all right? If that's what God gives you, guess how much faster the second 40 goes by than the first 40, okay? Well, from 40 to 50 goes by fast, but from 50 to 60 goes by faster. 60 to 70 goes by even faster. The vapors get shorter. And Solomon would say, it is absolute folly to think that you are designed just to work to retire. Retirement is a blip on your screen. It's a vapor of vapors. You think that that's going to make you happy? You are insane. So human effort does not create anything that endures. Human effort does not create anything that satisfies. The result of our labors is simply havel, because we leave it to someone else who didn't work for it. So, now that Solomon has everybody kind of going, oh, man. All right, so, do I think life is meaningless? Is Solomon talking? Do I think life is meaningless? Absolutely not. By the way, that's what brings so much pain, is knowing that there is meaning. Right. If life was meaningless, then become a nihilist. Right? Just live for today, you know, become a rock and roll star and die at 30. But because life does have meaning, that's what makes the vaporous nature of it so painful. And then to think, it's just filled with me working and then I die. And Solomon says, now, here, are you with me? Are you with me? Do you understand what I'm agonizing over here? And you're supposed to say, yes, I absolutely do. I'm locked into that stupid car with you and I can't get out. Solomon says, now here's what you need to know. You can't make havel any less havel. You can't do it. It's impossible. It's like trying to grab onto the wind. You can't do it. You can't change the nature of life. If God's bent it, you can't straighten it. If God's scattered it, you can't count it. It's beyond you. So here's what you need to do. Verse 24. There's nothing better for a man than to eat and drink and tell himself his labor is good. This I have seen, that it is from the hand of God. So, first, this is how you come to grips with what's the profit in the life of havel. First, life is a gift.
There's nothing better. Now, he does not mean that in an absolute sense, all right, but in a relative sense, there's nothing better than for a man to enjoy the basics of life, such as eating and drinking. So when you sit down and you eat and you drink, you say, this tastes good. And it's from the hand of God. I can actually just enjoy a meal. How long does a meal last? Well, if you're one of my sons, about 13 seconds. Okay, which means then another meal, then another meal. He can extend it out to an hour. But they're all quick. Okay, you can enjoy a meal, but it's over quickly. Solomon says, here's the key to not going insane. Everything is a gift from God. Okay? Your macaroni and cheese was a gift from God. Okay? Your iced tea was a gift from God. The lemon you got to put in it was a gift from God. Enjoy it. Enjoy it. And so there's nothing better than to just enjoy the basics of life. All right? Don't despise the basics. Because you can't hang on to them forever. Just enjoy them while you have them. By the way, there's coming a time where you won't have, Ecclesiastes 12, you won't have the teeth to enjoy the meal. So you better enjoy it while you can taste it. Then he says, and there's nothing better than to look at your labor. Now look at this. And tell yourself that your labor is, it's good. There is something good about it. Now, does that mean that Solomon says, aha, let me tell you what's good about it? Is that the point? That's not the point at all. The point is, I know that God's put me here to work, and if I work and do what I do unto the Lord, I can say that's good. Even if God calls me to work at NPL and dig a ditch one day and then go back and the supervisor says, now, fill that ditch. And you say, I just dug that ditch. Doesn't matter. Your job today is now to fill it. Solomon says, you know what? That's good. You don't have to understand why you do what you do. You don't have to understand why digging a ditch and then filling it up the next day is good. You don't have to understand why an endless stream of packages of absolutely inane, ridiculous products bought on the home shopping network is somehow good. You don't have to understand the morality of it. You just have to tell yourself by faith, what God has given me to do is good. Changing diapers is good. Breastfeeding a baby is good. Taking out the garbage is good. Changing the oil in your car is good. Because it's what God's given you to do. So enjoy the basics. Be satisfied with the work he's given you, seeing it's good. And here's the reason. You see it very clearly. Last sentence of verse 24. This also I've seen is from the hand of God. So you're writing this guy a ticket because he's speeding. You get back in your car and you think, I just did what God has called me to do. It's good. Okay? It's good. That's what God has given me to do. You work on a project, GE, for a year, or a year and a half, 2 years. And then at the end, they say, oh, we think it stinks. We're doing something else. Okay? Solomon says, hey, it's still good. Still good. You work on somebody and you get them all fixed up from physical therapy and now they're spry as a spring chicken and then they get hit by a train. Your work was good. All right? You homeschool your kids. They flunk out of college. It was still good. Verse 25. So, here, you. Remember back in chapter 2? You remember the problem was Solomon's looking at achievement, achievement, achievement. That's my reward. That's my reward. That's my reward. He says, you know what? You really want to enjoy life? Give up the whole achievement reward motif and take up the gift motif. Okay? So your children are not achievements. They're gifts. Okay? Right? Now, unfortunately, a lot of parents look at their kids as some kind of monument of their accomplishments. Other parents want to jump off a precipice. Okay? Because their only monument is, you know, whatever. Okay? Give up the achievement reward idea of life and embrace the gift. It's from God. It's from God. And so eating and drinking are gifts. They're not reward. Labor is a gift, not a reward. I love what Derek Kidner says. What spoils them is our hunger to get out of them more than they can give. That's what ruins it. Trying to get more out of it than it's designed to give. And so I have the quote there from Barry Webb. You can read that. Excellent, excellent little work there. So let me just wrap this up here. Verse 25, who can eat and who can have enjoyment without him? In other words, the only way to look at your life as a gift and enjoy it is to realize it's from the hand of God. Now, verse 26 creates a little bit of a problem. For to a person who is good in his sight, he's given wisdom and knowledge and joy, while the sinner is given the task of gathering, collecting, so that he may give it to the one who is good in God's sight. This too is vanity and striving after the wind. So, here's the beauty of Solomon's discovery. He didn't come up with a cure to how to make life last longer. Okay? He didn't go to, you know, anti-aging doctors to prolong his life by 30 years. What he did is he discovered that you can enjoy the basics of life and even the work that God has given you to do, no matter what it is, when you recognize that it's a gift to be enjoyed, but only while you have it. And so when God is at the center and he's acknowledged, not simply assumed, there can actually be true joy in this really short, fleeting life. And you can enjoy your kids when they're little, and then when they're medium, and then when they're grown up, and then when they have grandkids, and then when they're grown up, and you can enjoy every stage of life without trying to get more out of it than God intended it to give. You embrace that. It's the gift of God. Actually, it can change your life. The people who are miserable are the people who are trying to get more out of the vapor than God has designed. So the gift is still Havel, right? Notice what he says. This too is Havel and striving after the wind. You don't get to hang on to it. You don't get to keep it. Still a vapor. But notice, I think I mentioned the can of peaches and the can opener last week, right? That's the point of verse 26. Is that life is a gift, like a can of peaches is a gift. The ability to enjoy it is the can opener. And to some, God gives both. But even that, at the end of the day, is a vapor. And so, what does God require of us in this life? Well, he requires that we fear him. He requires that we keep his commandments. But he also requires that we enjoy the life that he's given to us as a gift. I'm to enjoy being a husband. I'm to enjoy being a father. I'm to enjoy being a pastor. I'm to enjoy being a follower of Christ. I'm to enjoy the little things, the big things, and everything in between. Because it is all a gift from God, and it's here today, and it's gone tomorrow. Let's pray. Father, we thank you for this great little book. We pray that you would help us to really take to heart the message. And we thank you, Lord, for all of the kind things that you give to us in this life. We thank you for the vocations that we have. We thank you for the kids that we have. We thank you for the spouses we have. We thank you for the great place that we live. But it will be over quickly. So help us to live to your honor and to your glory, and not to store up for ourselves treasure on earth, but help us to store up for ourselves treasure in heaven. And we ask this in Christ's name. Amen.
We hope you've enjoyed this message from Grace Community Church in Minden, Nevada. To receive a copy of this or other messages, call us at area code 775-782-6516 or visit our website, gracenevada.com.